My name is Kerry Roberts, and I'm Tennessee State Senator for Senate District 25, which includes Cheatham, Dixon, Hickman, Humphreys, and Robertson counties.
Yeah, and if I understand it, you were one of the legislators that proposed the bill in Tennessee that passed that I guess is asking federal government for permission to introduce work rules for Medicaid in Tennessee. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure then that you have been reading stories about the court case where Kentucky's Medicaid work rules were struck down for an entire federal court division. Just curious what impact you think that may have on Tennessee's law going forward. Any comment?
Yes, there are two answers to that question. The first answer is I would expect that federal court ruling will be overturned by the Supreme Court. And the reason why I say that is we already have work requirements in place for quite a few welfare and benefit programs. So I do understand the judge's logic that he was saying that the work requirements, in his opinion, didn't further the objective of Medicaid. But I think that will be disagreed with by the Supreme Court, so I expect it to be overturned. The second part of that answer is that that's very confusing to people. The bill that we passed didn't establish work requirements in Tennessee. The bill that we passed instructed TennCare to negotiate with CMS for work requirements in Tennessee according to the guidelines that CMS had previously published. That's not taken place yet, so there is no work requirement in Tennessee for TennCare. It was a piece of legislation that required TennCare to do that, and they've not yet done it. So there is no law to be struck down in Tennessee yet. They've not even applied for the waiver yet. It's called a waiver. They have to apply for a waiver to gain permission to do this in Tennessee, and they've not, to my knowledge, they've not even applied for the waiver. Because of this court opinion, it gives them an opportunity to structure it in a way, perhaps, that would not be impacted by the Kentucky decision. So it's really too early to answer a lot of those questions, but I suspect that TennCare will move forward mindful of this court decision. And of course, from a CMS standpoint, the ruling is really against them, not so much Kentucky. And I'm sure that CMS is very diligently working to figure out how they can approve waivers. There are several states that have these waiver requests in, that they can approve the waiver in a manner that will not be influenced by the ruling involving the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious how many Tennesseans you think might be impacted by the work requirement once it is, assuming that it is at some point instituted. My understanding is many of the individuals on TennCare in Tennessee's case are children, seniors, disabled.
Correct.
So how many people do you think actually will be impacted?
You are making a brilliant point that gets often overlooked. The purpose of TennCare is to provide medical care for the most vulnerable among us, and children, elderly, single moms, not people who are working age and able to go to work. And so what this segment of population that's impacted by this is a very small segment, but what's the issue that can't be overlooked here is that every time you have an able-bodied person who is on TennCare, you are consuming resources that could go to somebody who has a greater need. And that's what gets missed in this discussion. There is a finite piece of pie that is being carved up by the people on TennCare. And when you allow someone who's able-bodied to not work and be on TennCare, they're consuming a piece of that pie that somebody else could have. And so consequently, we've got several thousand people in Tennessee who are not getting the needed services. So for people to say this is about kicking people off of insurance is not true. For people to say this is about, taking insurance away from people or not, you know, whatever, it's not true. This is about protecting the people who need it the most. But there are mandates, and I know it's too complicated to go into in just a short interview, but there are mandates that have to be met when you allow somebody to be on tent care. And then there are things that you would do that are, I'm just going to oversimplify it by saying they're optional if money's available, but that could be medicine, that could be life altering for an individual that they can't get because the fundamental mandates have to be met for someone who frankly could be working. So to answer your question, it's a small segment of the population, but that can make all the difference in the world to someone who's on a waiting list and can't get the services they need, just that one person. And of course, what is so valuable in all this, what we've seen over and over again, is when you kind of push people out of the nest and get them to where they're working and they're embarking on a job, most of the time, again, we're talking about able-bodied working age people, most of the time, they get a really positive outcome from that experience. There's a lot of dignity in work. There's a lot about how people feel about themselves. They feel better about themselves. And statistically, every time you require somebody to work, their situation improves almost every time. So it's something, it's kind of like this. If you've got a 23, 24, 25 year old living at home who dropped out of college, and they happen to be a single, they fathered a child, and because the child and through a set of circumstances, they're eligible to be on tent care. That's rare, but they're living above your garage and they're on tent care, and they don't want to get a job because they say, well, I'll lose my tent care if I get a job. I'll earn more money and I'll lose the qualification for it. That's not helping them get on with their life. And that's really kind of a scenario that we're talking about. We're not, all this hysteria about, it's going to kick mothers off of tent care. It's going to kick grandmothers off tent care. This bill doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with the people who could be working, who are choosing not to. And we're saying, if you're going to stay on your tent care, you need to get a job, with the hope that they advance in a job and they get to the point where they don't need tent care. And that's just one of the ways to manage the cost of the program so that there are more resources available to the people who need it most, who absolutely positively cannot work, or they're being a caregiver for a child or an adult child who's disabled and they can't leave that situation. It's about making more resources available for those people. And that's this whole thing has been kind of blown out of proportion by the critics of it.
Just a couple of follow-on questions to clarify. First of all, anyone that is on tent care currently, whether they're work eligible or not, did qualify for, according to current rules, to be on tent care, correct?
That is correct. And most of the time, it's medical necessity or disability. And again, this affects a very small percentage of people that happen to be on tent care. And the best example I can give you, is there is a scenario where you've got single mom, single dad, and and divorced, and child is eligible for tent care, and because of the circumstances, the dad is eligible for tent care too, and he's not working, and you're requiring him to get a job.
I get that. You made that point earlier.
The most common.
So has tent care told you how many individuals fit that description?
No, they.
All right. So you're not. You're not.
Number as in.
You're not aware then of how many people would be impacted by.
The answer to your question is they did a fiscal note with a survey of their population, and yes, there is a number that was their estimate. We don't know. Here's the problem. Until they craft the policy, you know, I want to make sure I'm probably not being really clear here. And let me back up a second. Did they put a number out there with when they talked initially about what this would cost? Yes, they did. However, until they craft the policy and get the waiver approved, you don't know. So probably, you know, this might be something that affects maybe 25,000 people statewide, and that is just a guesstimate from me. That's not a number from TennCare.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Another thing that I wanted to clarify: I wasn't aware that TennCare had any kind of a waiting list for services. Are you saying that there are individuals in Tennessee who are qualified
to
be on TennCare but
they
aren't?
They abolished it.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
They did away with it. It doesn't exist now. But yet there's still people who are waiting on services. So when we went to this, the Choices program, they did away with, and that's a whole separate discussion, but we used to have a waiting list of, you know, several thousand people who were waiting for services and a variety of services. And they, when they went, you know, rolled out the Choices program, they in effect abolished the waiting list. But just because they don't track it doesn't mean that there aren't people waiting on services. And that is a whole separate conversation that you know, they used to talk about the waiting list, and now it doesn't even exist. There's no list anymore.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So there isn't this list out there that, as you described earlier. I think that's
not to my knowledge. I think they just, you know, poof, in one fell swoop, the list disappeared when they introduced the Choices program.
Okay.
And
I think I have it now. All right.
I still don't understand exactly how. You know, I guess the thought is, if the list doesn't exist, then there are not people, you know, waiting for services. I don't know, but they're still out there. And this is rare. And this is also very convoluted, and it's not. I mean, you find people within TennCare who even struggle to explain this, but you know, there are the mandated services that you have to provide if somebody's on TennCare, but then there are things that are regarded as optional, or you know whether funds are available. And let me give you a great example of how difficult some of this stuff is. You know, TennCare costs the state of Tennessee money. It's not all federal dollars. And so the extent to which it costs the state of Tennessee money then directly impacts other programs that the state might fund. So, for instance, you know, there's a young man that we're aware of in Hickman County who is he is in a wheelchair. He has a form of cerebral palsy that keeps him confined to a wheelchair because effectively he's a quadriplegic. And so the services that were available to him with respect to his mobility, he in effect now has to sit at home all day. And if he can get transportation to go do anything, he can be out. They'll take him to like Dixon for 2 hours and then bring him home. And previously, before there were cuts to this program, they could take him, and I don't know the details, but maybe they could take him, say, twice a week instead of once a week, and maybe for several hours instead of for 2 hours. And he had a little bit more flexibility on when he could go. And so these are the type. Now, that's not a medical necessity. That's a quality of life issue. So this kid, who's now in his 20s, when he was in school, in high school, he was honorary member of the football team. He was member of the homecoming court. All the other kids, loved him, gave him attention, included him in all the various things that they did. He graduates from high school, and he basically is sits at home. He'd love to take classes, but he's limited on, to what extent that he can do that, and very limited on the transportation opportunities that are made available to him. And so this is what that's not a medical thing, but then you have other people who might have some drug that impacts their quality of life. They may have a seizure medication that they're not able to receive because, there's not money in that program to do that. So this is all, it's a very convoluted area of Tennessee budget where changes in one area can have, very direct impact in another area as to what services people can receive. And we are constitutionally mandated to balance our budget. So we make these decisions, we have to really, really think about how is this going to impact the budget. So in Tennessee, the question is this: how can we help the most people with the limited amount of money that we have? And the policy question, which unfortunately has become a political question, the policy question is this: if someone is able to work, should we extend these services to them at the expense of someone who cannot? That's the policy question. And it's like a lot of policy conversations, they turn into political conversations. And in today's environment, everybody lines up for and against real quick based on, which party proposed the scenario. But I'll remind people that, Phil Bredesen is not a Republican or Democrat issue. Phil Bredesen was faced with this very same thing, and they had to unenroll, 305,000 people off of TennCare because we just couldn't afford it. We have to balance our budget. And that's where we are today. These costs are increasing dramatically. TennCare consumes a huge percentage of Tennessee's budget. And we've got to manage these dollars effectively, and we want to do it with as much compassion as we can so that the people who need services can get it. And again, it just begs the question then, should we be providing services to people who are able to go get a job? Doesn't apply to people. The CMS guidelines that we would assume are observed in this process say, if you volunteer your time, you check the box. If you're a caregiver, you check the box. If you're going back to school, you check the box. If you're looking for a job, you check the box. If you're training for job skills, you check the box. So it's not just, working X number of hours a week that check the box. There's a whole lot of other things too. So it's awfully lenient. It's not a get a job or we're cutting you off. There are other things that you could be doing too. And of course, one of the areas of hysteria was, what about caregivers? CMS made it very clear from the get-go, caregivers, check the box. If you are a caregiver, no one's going to make you go out and get a job. You're already meeting the requirement.
Right. I wanted to clarify, if I'm not mistaken, the situation you referred to with the gentleman in Hickman County in the wheelchair, last thing I heard was something like 8,000 Tennesseans on the wait list for disability services, and that's a different pie, using your metaphor, than TennCare. That's another State Department and another budgetary pie.
It is directly related. Some of that would be, TennCare services, but the extent to which the state has to do its share puts pressure on other budget areas. So it's a, none of this is done in a vacuum. So if the state portion of TennCare, increase is something else has to decrease.
Right.
Because
right.
we
yeah.
are constitutionally mandated to balance our budget.
Yep. I understand the point. Example. Just wanted to clarify that you know those are,
well,
are different.
Let me give you a great example that gets brought up a lot.
I need you to do it quickly because I'm running out of time here.
Okay. So, you know, people complained that Tennessee didn't expand Medicaid. And in some of the states that did, because they have to constitutionally mandate the budget, it came at the expense of teacher raises. It came at the expense of raises for government employees. And that's a challenge that we face is, if we spend money in one area, it's probably going to have to come out of another area unless we want to raise taxes. But we got to pay for it somehow.